It's a treat to have Brother Posey with us this evening. David, would you word a prayer for us, please?
Eternal God and Father in heaven, we are so thankful, Father, for the grace and mercy that you've shown us. We're so thankful for all the undeserved gifts that you've given us in our lives. We're especially thankful for Jesus and for the hope that we have in him. We're thankful, Father, for the fellowship with others who adhere to you and who are disciples of yours. We're thankful for this opportunity to study your word and to share the fruits of Ken's study. We pray that we will not only learn these things and take them into our minds, but take them into our hearts and live them out in our daily lives. We're thankful for this congregation, your people here, and pray your richest blessings upon it as it continues to do the work here. We're thankful for your people wherever they are, and ask that you continue to help them to walk that narrow road in a world that's becoming more perverse and difficult each day. Thankful again for this hour of study, and we pray that you bless us and help us to honor you in everything that we do, and save us in the end.
Amen. Appreciate David's mention of the world that we live in. That gives me a good entree into what we will be re-emphasizing tonight. What was the world like where the folks were that Paul was writing to here and where Timothy was? Where was Timothy? This is a test. In Ephesus. And what was it like in Ephesus whenever Timothy was there? Corrupt? Worldly? Perverse? But there were no false teachers hanging around, were there? Oh, there were. Okay. And that's what he's been addressing in the initial paragraph of this, after the salutation, the initial paragraph of this letter has to do with some folks that thought they knew everything, but they didn't know anything. Sound familiar? Okay. I didn't raise my hand, you noticed, but okay. All right. That was a problem because they were upsetting the folks that wanted to do right in Ephesus and leading people astray, and that's what false teachers are bent on doing. And they seem to find willing ears almost in any generation at any place on the planet. So he has addressed that extensively in this succinct paragraph here in 1 Timothy chapter 1. And so then in verse 18, and so I'm going to get up back up here because I was going to do all this beforehand until I started looking for batteries. And so it seems to be the way my day's going. So the helpful hints that Paul's been giving in this first paragraph, do they have any force behind them, or are they just kind of contemporary suggestions?
Force.
Or what analogy would you make in terms of what Paul has said here in terms of the force behind it?
Well, he uses the word command.
He uses the word command, which is a military term, which is
you will do it.
You do it. Yeah, it's not optional. You do it. This is what you need to do. This is a serious matter, and so you need to do what I'm telling you to do. So Paul then relates this next paragraph to what he has just said, this charge. Well, what was the charge that he had given him initially in this paragraph that we've been talking about? It's found the verse, the words in verse 3.
They teach no other doctrine.
That's right. Charge certain men. Command them. Charge them not to teach a different doctrine. And we've spent about 2 weeks talking about that, so we don't want to go back over that unnecessarily. But yes, this charge I commit unto thee, my child, Timothy, which we talked about again, this close relationship that Paul had with Timothy that is that we are introduced to in verse 2 in the salutation. This charge I commit unto thee, I'll skip that parenthetical statement, according to the prophecies which led the way to thee, that by them thou mayest war the good warfare, holding faith and good conscience, which some, having thrust from them, made shipwreck concerning the faith, of whom is Hymenaeus and Alexander, whom I delivered unto Satan, that they might be taught not to blaspheme. So we are told who two of the culprits are, Hymenaeus and Alexander. Hymenaeus is not that common a term, a word, or name. It quite possibly could be the same Hymenaeus that we run into over in 2 Timothy. Alexander is a very common name. It's kind of like Joe, you know, so it could be any old Joe. But obviously, this any old Joe and Hymenaeus were causing undue stress and strife in the church in Ephesus. And it's interesting that they're the only two individuals that are mentioned that are pointed out by Paul here as being ones to watch out for. Doesn't mean there weren't others, but it seems like that if there were, Paul would have named them. I mean, you kind of would think he wants to make sure that they know who he's talking about. But that's, you know, we don't know that for sure. But these two are either the only two, or maybe they're the ringleaders. David can probably relate to this, but have you ever mentioned people that are teaching false doctrine and make mention by name, and people get all bent out of shape because you call them by name? Well, David's shaking his head. Yes. Oh, you can't. That's just wrong. Well, what's wrong with it? I mean, it's not like we're gossiping. You know, it's like we need to know. Well, you remember Paul? In fact, Paul said to the Romans something similar in verse 17 of Romans chapter 16. Now I beseech you, brethren, mark them that are causing the divisions and occasions of stumbling contrary to the doctrine which you learn, and turn away from them. Now, we did, you know, when we were in Thessalonians and we were talking about discipline and so forth, we did point out that this is not like Nathaniel Hawthorne's Scarlet Letter, where you go around, you know, putting a brand on somebody's forehead so that you can identify them. The word mark there is the Greek word skopos or skopios, which is like a telescope. It's like keep your eye on. And some versions, I think, render it that way. Well, if you're going to keep your eye on somebody, you need to know who to keep your eye on, don't you? So it's certainly not out of order for false teachers to be identified, because sometimes their doctrine is a little bit sneaky. In fact, you know, Jude talks about that, didn't he? How some kind of had sneaked in to among them. And, of course, we could probably spend 2 or 3 weeks talking about the hidden rocks in their love feast, but I'm going to pass over that one. But I've got one opinion about it. But anyway, you know, he's saying you got to watch out for these guys. So he names them. Now, backing up to verse 18, this charge that Paul gave Timothy, he said, according to the prophecies which led the way to thee. And that has given a good deal of fodder for the canon of the commentators. In fact, I think Luther said, I don't have a clue what he's talking about here. And so he probably wrote 30 or 40 pages talking about that, not knowing what he was talking about. It is a puzzling expression because it has several possibilities. Rather than speculate on it ad infinitum, let's look at a couple of things, and this is why I wanted to make sure I had the screen operative tonight. Look at 1 Timothy 4:14. Neglect not the gift which is in thee, which was given thee by prophecy with the laying on of the hands of the presbytery. Well, I guess we need to know who the presbytery is. The elders. Thank you. Yes, presbytery, the elders. Then hold that thought in your memory bank and go over to 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 6. For which cause I put thee in remembrance that thou stir up the gift which is in thee through the laying on of my hands. We've got two laying on of hands here. We've got that of Paul to Timothy, and then we've got that of the presbytery to Timothy. And in both cases, we've got something to suggest an unusual component to this. In verse 14 of chapter 1 Timothy 4, he mentions a gift which was given thee by prophecy. And then, 2 Timothy 1, he mentions the gift of God through the laying on of his hands. Now, you can couple those two verses, go back to our text in 1 Timothy 1. According to the prophecies which led the way to thee, that by them thou mayest war the good warfare, etc., etc. Can you think of any prophecies or the use of the word which does not necessarily require the miraculous? Do you have to look at the context and put all the parts of the puzzle together to come up with a good suggestion anyway or possibility? But what does the word prophet mean? Mouth, okay. So there's the speaking forth of the message idea in there. So this must have something to do with that in some way, shape, fashion, or form. Let's think for just a moment about what we know. In fact, we just Sunday morning had a lesson from Acts chapter 2, didn't we? Is there anything in Acts chapter 2 that at least rings a bell here in terms of prophecy and the New Testament period of time? I'm not talking about the fulfillment of Old Testament prophecy that Peter talked about, but anything else that comes to mind? All right, okay. The Joel mentioned that, and we can look at that text so you can have it in front of you. Whenever he's quoting, that is when Peter's quoting from Joel chapter 2, that's J-O-E-L, Joel chapter 2, verse 17, when he says, "This is that which was spoken through the prophet Joel, it shall be in the last day, saith God, I will pour forth of my spirit upon flesh, upon all flesh, and your sons and your daughters shall prophesy." We know that it was necessary for, again, the miraculous gifts to be operative in that infant stage of the church because they didn't have the New Testament. They needed the completed revelation, and they needed inspired sources for that. So, there, and you know, Stephen had, or Philip had, you know, seven daughters that prophesied. So, is there a possible connection between that and what Paul's telling Timothy? I think it's possible, entirely possible, because he talks about that he wants him to war the good warfare, he wants him to hold on to the faith and good conscience. And part of that is related to the prophecy of Joel, and that is that there would be these spiritual gifts that were operative in the first century, and Timothy certainly needed that element of input and strength. Now, the question then becomes, did Timothy have any miraculous endowment that had been given to him? Yeah, the answer is yes. All right. Okay. Then we just read that. All right. Let's go back again to 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 6. For which cause I put thee in remembrance, that thou stir up the gift of God which is in thee through the laying on of my hands. I know somebody said a couple of weeks ago we OD'd on grammar, but this is going to be a short lesson on grammar, so hopefully you don't OD on it. But it's something that I would really encourage you to kind of latch on to doing this whenever you're doing your study, and now you've got the internet and you've got all of the basic resources that you need for free. Okay, for free. Now, this is not a free program, but you can do essentially the same thing with eSword. All right, so since I can't talk and type at the same time, I'm going to go back over here, and we're going to do that, and go over here, and go down to verse 6. Oops. Wrong chapter. Okay. What you would benefit from doing is to look at the Greek text. Again, you can do that with eSword. If you do the King James with the Strong's numbers, all you have to do is just click on the number, or even just scroll across the number, and it'll pop up on if you've got your dictionaries connected to it. But look at the Greek words. We need to learn to dig into the text. All right, it's going to be the wrong verse, but we'll back up, okay? And what we're looking for is through. It's translated, I guess, King James in the King James is by, through in the American Standard. It's dia. A primary preposition denoting the channel of an act. Through, that is, in very wide applications, local, causal, etc. That's Strong's definition. And you've got Strong's, and you've got a couple of other dictionaries in eSword. So through, the means of, as he says, the channel of the action. So the gift that Paul's talking about to Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 1 is that which he said came through the laying on of my hands. That was the means by which this gift was conveyed to him. Now, how does that square with what we know about the impartation of spiritual gifts in the first century? How did people receive spiritual gifts? All right, through the laying on of the hands by the apostles. Through the laying on of hands by the apostles. Now, let's go back to 1 Timothy chapter 6. Get back again, talking and typing at the same time. I'm just not into that multitasking yet. You know, I don't know if it's probably too late for me. And we want to go down there to the text that mentioned the presbytery. And there's method in my madness, okay, for bringing this up. And And that's 1 Timothy chapter 4. I don't know why I said verse. I knew that would say again, talking and typing at the same time. Just, we're not good. All right. So we're going to buffer a little bit. Go back up to chapter 4. Verse 14. You notice in this text, which is the New American Standard, it says, was bestowed upon you through prophetic utterance with the laying on of the hands of the presbytery. Now let's go here. Again, we're going to do a word study. And I'm doing this so you'll learn how to do it, okay? I'm not doing it just to take up time, all right? This is mata. Again, a preposition denoting accompaniment with, right? With the laying on of the hands of the presbytery. What's the difference between with and through?
With, they go side by side. Through is one because of the other.
Right. That's the means by which it was conveyed. With the laying on the hands of the presbytery. If I was to modernize that, I'd say they shook hands with you and patted you on the back and said, Godspeed to you or whatever. You know, that there are many groups that believe that their officers, officials, whatever, have miraculous powers to lay their hands on people and to impart and or accomplish something that is miraculous. And they will cite this passage as their proof text. So, again, because you've dug into the text, you know that there's a difference here in these prepositions. The difference between just something that is kind of alongside of, or this one that is the means by which this action was accomplished. So Paul laid his hands on Timothy and imparted spiritual gift to him, and or gifts, or you know, I don't know what all he was able to do, but it was miraculous. Now, I'll just throw this out as a think so, because I know there's other possibilities. But it seems to me that perhaps that's what Paul has in mind back over in 1 Timothy chapter 1 when he is, again, charging Timothy to be faithful, to stay solid, to fight the good warfare. And we know that fight is against false doctrine. And this would be a reminder to him that there were prophecies that related to this idea of having this extra special help. Remember, Jesus promised his apostles that in his final meeting with them before his betrayal and crucifixion. You read in John, especially 14 and 16, about how the Holy Spirit would enable them to know all of the truth and bring to the remembrance all the things that were said. Of course, we know that they then had the ability to impart gifts to others, and in the first century that was necessary. So I can see a direct relationship here between the prophecies of Joel, what Jesus promised, and what Paul did for Timothy that would enable him to keep the charge that Paul mentions here in fighting this good warfare. Now, that makes sense to me, but I will readily admit there are other possibilities, but that's the one I'm kind of leaning toward right now. Roxanne? Oh yeah. Well, that laying hands is an idiom. It doesn't require. It doesn't. It's not used exclusively to refer to a miraculous event. It is like the spiritual gift thing.
It was apostles that had the ability.
Right, but as far as laying on hands, it'd be like me saying, "Well, you know, we shook hands, and or I patted him on the back, or you know, something like that."
Kind of in conjunction with the
elders. Yes. Right. So again, the context is going to determine whether it has a miraculous bend to it or whether it's just a common, you know, common greeting or salutation or, you know, like bon voyage, you know. All right? Now, I'm wide open to your thoughts on that. What this prophecy, these prophecies or whatever that led the way to thee, as he says here. If you have another thought on that, I'm not dogmatic about that. Some things maybe. Any ideas? Anybody else have any input on that? Holding on to the faith, that is holding faith and a good conscience. Just reminders and admonitions. Of course, we know that later on in chapter 6, Paul talks, admonishes or encourages Timothy to fight the good fight of the faith and lay hold on life eternal, whereunto thou was called and confess the good confession in the sight of many witnesses. And then he says again, I charge thee in the sight of God. So Paul is repeatedly charging Timothy, not that he's trying to beat him over the head with a command stick, but he's stressing the importance of this, his responsibility. It's an awesome responsibility that a gospel preacher has to make sure that the truth is taught and that error is exposed, because as Paul talks about both in this letter and also the next one, the danger is very real, that people are going to turn away from the truth and turn aside to fables, and they're going to follow all these false teachings, and they're going to have itching ears and go find teachers that are going to tell them what they want to hear. And so it is a war that he's talking about here, and it's a war that, as most wars do, involves life and death. And of course, now we're talking about the souls of men. So it's not surprising that Paul uses very forceful terminology in stressing his orders to Timothy. Ed?
So, verse 18, the charge that he's telling him to do is about fighting the false teachers.
Mm-hmm. And remaining faithful and so forth. Yes.
And he's to use the gifts that he's been given to help him do that.
Well, he reminds them that this is something that he can where he can get strength and help and yes, not only the information but also the awareness of that is going to be encouraging to him. Again, I don't want to keep picking on David, but I don't know about you, but sometimes fighting error gets rather wearisome. It can wear you out. It really can. And, you know, some people throw up their hands and give up. And that's exactly what Satan wants us to do. And so these are words of not only instruction, but also words of encouragement to Timothy. And so a reminder of the source of help that he has is going to be beneficial to him. What are you grinning about?
I didn't wonder how you deal with when you're dealing with something like that. Someone says, well, did you go to them and talk to them?
Yeah.
That's the attitude that you have. You've got to go talk to them before you can say that they're false teachers. No matter what they write, no matter how public they say it, you still have to go talk.
And here's my response to that. If they're going to publicly proclaim it, then I can publicly refute it. If it's a private matter, then yes, I think, in fact, I agree 100%. I need to go talk to them. And first of all, I want to make sure of what's being said. You know, it's just like whenever A guy up in Oregon one time said he told some. He really put his foot in his mouth because he was talking to some of my friends that know me very well, but he didn't know that who they were. And he said, "Have you heard what that Ken Darch teaching?" And da 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 da. And boy, this one friend of mine said, "You don't know what you're talking about." Not no, you have. There were some rumors going around, and to the fellow's credit, and I didn't know him. I'd never met him. But to the fellow's credit, he called me, and he apologized to me. He said, "You know, I've learned a valuable lesson here." I said, "Well, I'm glad." You know, he said, "I need to check these things out before I go talking to other people about them." But if it's in print, that's right. Sure, we need to try to, if we can, talk to folks and try to. Persuade them otherwise if they're in error, but that doesn't keep us from pointing out that this is error and Joe Blow's promoting it. Cameron?
So, yeah, I mean, you always have to keep in mind there's a difference between a teacher of error and one who is deceived by error and how we approach them.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Right. Yeah, that's a perfect parallel, right? And I'm glad I intended to bring that up, and I got carried away and forgot to bring that up. But yes, I'm glad you brought that up. That's for Acts 13:3. Again, laid hands on them. Okay, just pat them on the back. We would say, wish them well, give them encouragement, and send them on their way. Cameron?
I guess do you apply that same logic to Ananias and Paul? Saul at the time goes to Ananias, and Ananias lays his hands on Paul, the scales fall from his eyes, and says...
No, that's not the same thing. No, the Ananias had been instructed by the Lord to go to him and teach him, and then... So Saul of Tarsus' response was to the gospel that pricked his heart, and then he was urged by Ananias to arise and be baptized and wash away his sins. So I don't see a parallel there.
But Ananias was not apostle. So you think it's kind of a limited purpose as far as the...
Well, we don't have much. We don't have any other information about him. I don't know. If an apostle had endowed him with some miraculous abilities or not. We just don't have any other information about him other than that encounter with Saul in Acts 9:22-26. Yeah. Did I see another hand over here somewhere? This subject of spiritual gifts is one that, as you well know, is something that we have to deal with in this world, this religious world, especially with television now. It's everywhere, and so we need to be well equipped to deal with it and to answer these questions, and that's the reason I wanted to use this passage here in 1 Timothy 4, because that's one that is run. They'll run to and say, "See there, see the leadership has the ability to do that." Anything else on that? So would it be possible to use this text to address the Calvinistic doctrine of the impossibility of apostasy? That means once you're saved, you're always saved. Hymenaeus and Alexander fit that description, huh? That's right. They weren't. Yeah, they weren't sincere, were they? Yeah, that's the classic answer to that. Well, they really weren't saved. Yeah. It's strange, isn't it, that Paul said to the Galatians, in Galatians chapter 5. You were running well, verse 7. Who hindered you that you should stop obeying the truth? They were obeying the truth and then they stopped it.
Or any time the phrase, lest your faith be in vain, is used.
Well, there is such a thing as pseudo-faith. You know, I'll grant that. But, in the Hebrews, that we could spend another week on this, but there are so many passages that knock that doctrine of impossibility of apostasy in the head. It's not even funny.
Timothy 4:1.
Yeah. So Paul delivered Hymenaeus and Alexander to Satan. I don't know if that was a FedEx delivery or what, but he did it. What does that mean?
I think it means probably the same thing it means in
Corinthians. I agree. It's exactly the same thing as 1 Corinthians 5:5, which is?
Method of discipline.
I'll tell you how I paraphrase that. That's the means by which you show the person that the only one that approves of their behavior is Satan. That's what it means to deliver one to Satan. There's nothing else bizarre about it. You go to them, of course, if we follow the procedure of individual and perhaps two or three and congregational, whatever, all the way along the line, it's an appeal to the person. Please look at the scriptures, look at your life, look at what you're doing. You have severed your relationship to the Lord by this sinful action. And so you know that Satan is the only one that is happy about that. And so please repent, come back to the Lord. Which is what the man in 1 Corinthians 5 did. He repented and he came back to the Lord. 2 Corinthians chapter 2 chronicles that for us. But that's what it means to deliver one to Satan. Nothing extraordinary in terms of that process. Somebody asked me about that last week, so are we all clear on that? And you notice the purpose clause is stated here in the last phrase. That is so that they might learn not to blaspheme. They're supposed to learn from this. It's not just a matter of, again, conking them on the head and kicking them out the door, which is essentially what excommunication is. And by the way, the word excommunication is not used in the Bible. We can thank the Catholics for that. It's a matter of help this person to wake up and see the consequences of their actions so that they will come back to the Lord and stop the sin. In this case, let's see, there's another lesson here too. How much time do I have for another sermon? False teaching sometimes among our own folks is kind of winked at, like, that's his opinion and I've got my opinion and we can all just grin and be happy and we can just go right on down the road and we can agree to disagree and all is well in Huntington Beach or wherever you are, all is well in California. Well, I'm not saying that we need to pull out our 45s and start, shooting each other. But are we doing anybody any favors if we just agree to disagree? Who's happy about that? Satan. That's right. And that's why Paul charged Timothy not to just agree to disagree with these guys, but to fight them spiritually. Fight the good fight. Fight the warfare. Fight the war against error. And that doesn't always win a lot of friends and influence a lot of people. And you can get highly criticized for that. But one thing that does bother me, I wasn't around, and so maybe some that are a lot older than I am can relate to this. But I would grant you that there was much of the disagreement in times past that was very mean-spirited. I mean, I've read a bit about it, and boy, those guys, they did pull out the 45s. I mean, and they lured the boom on each other. And I don't think anything good came out of that. And so we need to do it in the spirit of love and concern for truth, but not in a compromising demeanor whatsoever. Not, again, well, I know you've got your opinion, I've got mine, and I'm not talking about matters of opinion now. We're talking about matters of truth. Okay, we're talking about things that will cause people to lose their souls. Cameron?
I was just going to make that same point. There's a difference between matters of judgment, personal or otherwise, and matters of doctrine, true doctrine, which we've kind of lost the sense of the meaning of the word doctrine and conflated it with essentially anything that I believe. And there's a difference in that word.
Yeah, and Paul's already said in verse 10 that we're talking about sound doctrine, the healthy doctrine, the good food, not the junk food. Now, with that thought in mind, notice how he characterizes what these guys need to learn. Need to learn not to blaspheme. Well, it's blasphemy just saying, oh, God's not, or Jesus is not God, or something like that? Or is it a broader term?
Broader rejection.
It would be anything that's against God. Anything that's against against truth, anything that's against the sound doctrine would be blasphemous to God, because it's an indictment against God. It's an indictment against His Word. His Word is truth, Jesus said in John 17:17. So, again, you can't segregate false doctrine from the Lord, because sound doctrine has all come from Him. Every word has come through the process of inspiration. God breathed. It's God breathed. And so if we are going to take issue with what God said, in effect, we're challenging the source. And that's what these guys were doing. Now, the speculation is fairly consistent, and his speculation is that, well, maybe these are two of the guys that Paul was talking about over here that were trying to be teachers of the law and didn't understand what they were talking about. Maybe. I can see that, that would certainly tie them in to what Paul had just said to Timothy, but I don't know exactly what they were teaching, except it was wrong, and that's all I need to know. So what do you think about that? Anybody want to say anything about that? I've been doing too much talking tonight.
Well, it does make you wonder why those two particular names were mentioned. Whether he just had them on his mind, or if they were the ringleaders, or whatever.
I think, again, a necessary conclusion would be these are guys that really have to be singled out, because it's dead serious. Whatever they're doing is big-time problems. It didn't just like... they've got their nose out of joint and folks are kind of, upset. This is serious. Paul?
I don't know whether it's right. It could be that they were some of the elders that Paul was talking about back in Acts 20.
It could be. Yeah, even from among your own selves, men shall rise speaking perverse things and lead people astray. Yes. And so it's possible. Again, we're over into the area we don't know, but it's entirely possible. Okay, we're just about out of time, and the subject changes. Well, I guess one of the things I'm going to do in my retirement is do what I started to do 15 years ago, and that is transfer all these notes into a new text that's not falling apart. Therefore, I exhort, therefore, this is verse 1 of chapter 2. This is a transitional statement. Okay, now I've got something else I need to talk to you about. And there are several things that he's going to be talking about. In fact, the rest of the epistle is about the other things that he had on his mind. So he has covered all that he needed to say about those false teachers, and now he's going to move on. And some other serious, very serious issues. Now, it's not totally foreign to the idea of false teaching, but because anything that's wrong inevitably is tied to a lie. And we know who the father of liars is. That would be the devil. So anything that people are doing that's wrong, that's unhealthy, rooted in an unhealthy doctrine, is a result of Satan's work. But now, the emphasis is on prayer. I exhort, therefore, first of all, that supplications, prayers, intercessions, thanksgiving be made for all men, for kings, and all that are in high place, that we may lead a tranquil and quiet life in all godliness and gravity. So first of all, he tells them to do what to do, and then he tells them why to do it. You know, we've put a lot of emphasis on those FORs and those therefores, and also on the INs, that is, being in connection with, as Linsky likes to point out. Also look for the that's. Now, I think some of the modern versions do translate it so that, which kind of helps get your mind in that mode of thinking, all right, now, this is why he just said what he said. It's not simply that he just wants to remind them to be prayerful. But in this particular case, he's got something specific in mind in terms of the purpose of the prayers, what to be praying for specifically. And, of course, this is not all-inclusive. This is just one thing to pray for. So, between now and next week, go ahead and do some word studies. If you don't have ESORT, or if you don't have a Bible program you like, Blue Letter, whatever, let me know. I'll help you out with it. But you really, really do need to, and it will be very beneficial to you to learn how to do some of these word studies. You don't have to know beans from bacon about Greek. All right, so don't worry about that. You can look. I don't care if it looks like hand scratching. It doesn't matter, because you're going to have English. You're going to have English words that you can read. And you can get some basic concepts, just like we did with Mata and Dia. And this is going to help you. It's going to help you grow. Which is another thing that Paul tells Timothy to do, to help people learn, so that they can teach other people. That's in the second letter, chapter 2, verse 2. Right? So our time is up. Any final questions or comments? Thank you.